This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Jenny hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
I lost my mind again, out where the river swelled with rain. But she kindly took me in, made me feel I was not the one to blame. As change was blowing in the trees, the unknown shaking at my knees, her voice places me at ease and I'm home again. Girl of all seasons, girl of all seasons, girl of all seasons.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett on the P2 Podcast. Broadcasting worldwide in beautiful high-definition audio or something quite like it. To all corners of the globes. To all fans worldwide seeking knowledge, seeking perspective, seeking some insight into these chaotic musical times. Coming to you today, as always, from the beautiful halls of Trinidad World Recording Studios, my beautiful studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. Phil Pritchett here with you folks with the podcast. Great to be with you today. Thrilled as always. I hope you're all having a great spring. Spring has sprung. Oh, man. What says spring more than the full band, than Phil playing a gig, maybe without a jean jacket? You know, it just means spring is in the air. The leaves are coming out. So much going on. The blue bonnets in bloom. So fantastic. Thrilled to be here. Man, we got a great show for you. Our old friend Max Hartman, hasn't he been great? So entertaining. What an entertaining guy. I'm going to try and get Max in our middle segment today, our guest segment, to tell the story about how he hung out with U2 all night long. He lied his way into a party down there at the Crescent Hotel in Dallas. Hilarity ensues. Hilarity ensues. So I hope he's up for it. We're going to have Max in here. Max Hartman rounding out his... Got quadruple shot of Max Hartman. He's been here on and off the last several weeks. Looking forward to that. Oh, man. You know what I've been thinking about, folks? Of course, all of you join this show. Listening to this show are always looking for perspective. You out there on the cutting edge. In the know. The knowledgeable ones. You know, it's something we talk about a lot in the van. With my friends around the house. And especially, I talked earlier about watching Mad Men a lot. Me and my wife been catching up on Mad Men on Netflix. Of course, the joke on Mad Men, if you haven't seen it, is it takes place in the early 60s. And all the jokes are, it's a drama. But there's a lot of funny little tidbits about, you know, guys making sexist jokes or, you know, driving down the road without a seatbelt on with a beer between their legs, just kind of cruising down, you know, and going waving at a cop. Hey, you know, just how times have changed. They go to a picnic one time. They're having a picnic in the park. And, you know, when it's time to go, Don Draper, the lead character and his family, he just kind of crumples up a beer can, just throws it in the grass. Then he kind of grabs the blanket and just gives it a big, you know, and just kind of does a little whip, you know, a wave. And just knocks all the food and paper plates off, just leaves it on the ground, just gets back in the car and drives home. That's how he did it in the 60s. And even the 70s, I think. Some of the 80s, maybe. I remember my folks growing up. So it's fascinating to me. So, you know, when I'm joking around, then believe me, I'm joking. And let me just say by talking about this stuff, I'm not complaining, okay? I'm not complaining about my life. I'm not whining about anything. But there's no doubt that you watch Draper and these Mad Men guys, early 60s. And I think about my own dad, who was a great father. But, you know, he didn't bathe us and change diapers. He didn't, that wasn't expected of him. He worked all the time. He came home and, you know, patted us on the head. He threw the ball around in the front yard. He coached our team. He was there for us on every level. But he didn't clean the house. He didn't scrub the bathtubs and stuff. And I look at all my friends, myself, and man, that is what we just know that that's what you've got to do. Pretty much. And we knew that, I was married young, mid 90s, and I knew that going in. I didn't think I'd just come home from work. Just like my dad, I'm just going to sit on the couch, put my feet up, you know, my wife will have dinner ready and, grab a scotch or something. My dad didn't drink scotch, but you get what I'm saying. Don Draper here, you know, smoking in his armchair. Leave your father alone. He's had a long day. You know, now when we walk home, our wives, and perhaps understandably so, hand us the children. Thank goodness you're home, because I'm done with this. Take over. So we come in the door at 5, 6 o'clock, and we take over. Man, we bathe the kids. We take them, go pick them up at ballet, start some dinner, start the bath, get them in there, read books. You know, that's what we do. That's what dads do. And I wonder, looking back at Mad Men, Don Draper, early 60s, the extreme, and you know what, early 60s and beyond, all the way back to, B.C., men lived a certain way. We hunted, we worked, whatever. The women took care of the house. And we know that that's all changed, but it's changed so dramatically in a short period of time. Of course, women working is the big thing. I mean, you know, hey, you know, and rightly so, in a lot of families, you say, well, look, she's got a job and he's got a job. Everybody's got to pull their own weight. Fair enough. Totally fair enough. But a lot of my friends, their wives maybe don't work. They work, but they still come home and bathe. And so they don't just come home and put their feet up in the hammock and say, hey, I'm done. You know, So I talk to people about this. This subject comes up a lot because, you know, I've got a big family. We're always talking about the kids and the roles and stuff and laughing at what we do and everything. But I want to give an idea out there to any of you college students out there, high school students listening to the program, you enlightened souls out there, maybe looking for a great topic, a great, thesis, capstone, investigative paper you might need to do. Here's one for you. Show me where that changed fundamentally. Is there a moment, a TV show, not that caused the switch in the role of the man in the household, but kind of give some perspective on how that changed, when it changed? And if you already know the answer out there, if you have an idea, of course, email me, phil@philpritchard.com, because I'm fascinated. And of course, you say, well, it's been a gradual trend. I mean, you know, women started working more 70s and 80s. Men started doing more in the house. And by the time we got into the 90s and stuff, man, men were just doing everything. We knew how to cook and clean and change the baby's diapers and all that. But even in the 1980s, remember, someone said the other day, they go, man, what, you know, like Mr. Mom, the movie, Keaton staying home. I'm like, forget Keaton, dude. That whole thing, that was the gag in that movie. The dad is trying to stay home with the kids. Ha, 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 ha. Isn't that hilarious? Look at him trying to vacuum. Look, he's putting the diaper on the kid and it's on his head. Oh, wow, great. You know, that was the whole bit of the movie. What if we had a movie where the dad was trying to take care of the house and the kids? They must have just busted up in the old studio board meeting with that idea. Write us a script. We'll get Michael Keaton to do it. It'll be hilarious. And it was hilarious. Ha ha. But, so that was still the bit. 3 men and a baby. You know, Ted Danson. Who was it? Danson and Gutenberg and Tom Selleck. You know, trying to change a baby's diaper and falling off. Men trying to take care of a baby. What? This is crazy. You know, I mean, it's so silly. But man, this was, you know, late 80s, mid 80s, late 80s. Hilarious that the men, but maybe that was a sign of the man starting to stay home as the women were starting to work. I don't know, but did it change that much to 1995? By the time yours truly, Phil here, how you doing, was married and raising kids. And don't get me wrong, I wouldn't have it any other way. But I'd like to know, man, if there was a defining moment, you read about, I remember taking a film class in college, movie called It Happened One Night, starring Clark Gable. It was real old, kind of a funny slapstick romantic comedy kind of thing. One of the first real big romantic comedies. And there was a scene where Clark Gable's changing his shirt and he unbuttons his shirt, and he's not wearing an undershirt. And they say, man, that moment, that trend died out. All of a sudden, undershirt sales disappeared because people were like, ooh, you know, Clark Gable didn't wear an undershirt. Well, I'm not going to wear an undershirt either. And it's not something like that. It's more fashion. That's more trendy. So as far as men taking care of the family, we were just doing some investigative thoughts, you know, on how that started to come to be. We stayed at my sister's in Austin a little while back, and she was really big on the gradual thing. She said some parents that, you know, my dad was in college in the 50s, but maybe some parents that were in college in the, you know, 60s or early 70s, maybe were already, you know, taking on, men were already bathing the children and cooking and changing diapers. I don't know, man, but it's fascinating to look back. That's always my, but I like to turn into Don Draper occasionally. The man who puts his foot down, who won't take anything. You know, because sometimes, you know, you're in the house with the kids, everyone's screaming, I'm bathing them, trying to cook, whatever. I'll kind of look at my wife and just say, what would Draper say about me here? What would Don Draper say about the situation I'm in? You know what? Of course, she says he'd light a cigarette and just walk out the door. I'm like, that's right. Ah, but alas, I won't do it. Alas, I won't do it. Where are you going to go? You know, there's nowhere to go. There's no men's clubs. You know, there's nowhere to go anyway. Where am I going? Go to the mall? Go to the college bar? I don't know. I just walk out in the front yard, pretend I'm talking on my phone, and go back into the house after a few minutes. Well, that's how we roll. Well, speaking along these lines, do you remember Blake Walker? The podcast's, P2 Podcast's own Blake Walker, my old road manager, hilarious guy, diehard Aggie, you know, lives up there here in North Texas. His beautiful wife, Megan, you know, he's raising a child, married, trying to do some work on his house. He sends me this email. This is something he posted on Facebook. And this kind of goes along with these same lines of being a man in the modern era. And so I was just going to read it to you in full here, if I could. A dramatic read. I'm going to try to do it justice here because I've got it printed out here. This is going to be slightly edited here. But a dramatic reading. Now picture Blake Walker, 30 years old, by his own admission, perhaps maybe not in his college shape. Although he looks great. You look great, Walker. You know, and we've played for Blake and his friends many occasions. Will Haley and all you guys out there. We've played on many shows and backyard parties and all kinds of stuff. So Walker posts this, and this is, I think, speaks to a lot of men in the modern era. A little more on the what is expected of us, the challenges therein. See if you agree. Blake Walker right here. He posted on Facebook a while back. Can I get some music? There we go. We ready? When trying to install your own radiant barrier in your attic, never do it alone. It all starts with a simple 30-second inspirational Home Depot commercial. The catchy slogan, "Let's build something together." Translation, you will have at least 3 trips in the same night to purchase either the wrong materials or not enough of the right materials. Ed Harris, I guess he does the Home Depot videos. I haven't seen those. Ed Harris will not explain this in his 30-second spot. But you will get fired up and believe you are a man and can build anything. It will take a minimum of 20 minutes for anyone on the staff to actually acknowledge you and begin to answer your questions. And each answer you will get frustrated even more. As a 16-year-old skateboard kid or a man the age of your grandpa slowly reminds you why you have no business trying to do it yourself, any project, ever. Well, that's true of Home Depot. You go in there, you just wander the aisles, looking skyward at stacks of lumber, waiting for someone to say, "Can I help you, sir?" Don't wait too long, I say. So Walker goes on. He continues. Also, when emailing your buddies to get local help, also remember, unless you let one of them have a kidney within recent years, they will all bail as soon as they read the word attic. Boy, I can attest to that. He knew better than to email me. Crawling up in your attic, Walker. You got to be kidding. At least one leveled with me and told me he would be washing his hair every night this week. So one night I tried to do it myself, but what translated to was an overweight 30-year-old man trying not to die. He's talking about himself here. What it looked like was a chubby guy trying to break dance with a leg cramp in slow motion. What I failed to realize in my attic is my attic has no walking space, and I'd have to balance on wooden 2-inch wide joists. Joists? Is that how you say that? While trying not to die. It was an epic fail, and after an hour of trying not to fall through my ceiling, I got half of a barrier in place, stapled to the lower end of my roof. Oh, man. Hopefully tomorrow night will not... my method of sliding one joist at a time resembled some kind of a redneck Frogger game, and I managed to occupy most of my semi-productive hour inside the attic. Spent the next hour cutting more radium bearer sections. Hopefully tomorrow will not suck as bad. And never chug a 5-hour energy drink after you put your 2-year-old to bed. Blake Walker, in his attic, installing a radiator barrier. Boy, I admire him for getting in there, though, man. Walker, you are a man. You're trying to be a man. I appreciate that. We all appreciate that on this show. Getting a little work done around the house. Oh, man, I just turn up the AC and write a bigger check. I never get up there and try to do it. Or hire some guy. Goodness gracious. You know? My deal on the house is it's been here since the 50s. It's fine. You know, a roof, a crack in the ceiling. We might have some foundation issues. I'm like, what's it going to do? Fall over? I don't know. I hope that's not right. Well, 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 I hear him rummaging out here. Out in the hall, our good friend Max Hartman will be in here, hopefully to tell his U2 story about how he hung out with U2 with an alias one night in Dallas years ago. Max Hartman coming up next.
And when that snow came down, I was cold, I was lost from everything. But she kindly took my hand and said, follow the weeks, they'll always lead you to spring. And though I'll always lose my way, stuck out in some lonesome winter's day, her light carries me to May and makes me whole again.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here with you on the Pete Sue Podcast, enlightening your musical life, or seeking to do so, in high-definition audio, or something quite like it, from Trinidad World Recording Studios. You know him, you love him, the podcast's own actor, song and dance man, L.A., Dallas, Pritchett childhood friend and former bandmate, the great Max Hartman joins us here.
It's really great to be back with you, Phil.
Hey, listen to that voice, man. That is the voice of tens of thousands of dollars from Domino's Pizza and other establishments. Am I right or am I wrong?
Am I right or am I right or am I right? Right, right, right.
Voice talent, talking about his days in L.A. You heard us talking a while back about recording records in high school. I caught up with Max. Me and the band were playing gigs in Dallas. I can't even remember where I was when you told me this story. It was the story of Max, the biggest U2 fan that I knew in my little universe. I mean, Max loves U2, man. Just loves them, you know, Joshua Tree and on. And one night, well, what tour was it? Why don't you take it? You go to the U2 show.
Yeah, okay. So I've been going to... I was a big U2 fan, especially junior high. I was probably the biggest first concert that, you know, I saw the Joshua Tree live.
That was your first concert?
No. It was my first U2 concert.
Okay, okay, yeah, yeah.
And they were peaking. They're on the cover of Time magazine.
Oh,
you
know, changing the world. Changing the world.
Changing rock and roll forever.
So you went to, this was in Tarrant County.
This was years ago. I go to the Tarrant County show.
Now, Convention I'm just saying, Center, downtown Fort Worth.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So that was the famous show, the first show, the first time I'd seen him. So after that, I almost caught him every time.
Bono, shirtless vest, cowboy hat.
Yeah, just rocking.
Yeah, and they filmed a lot of that for Rattle and Hum, the movie.
Mm-hmm. And saw that movie. And so fast forward years later, now they're doing the songs All You Can't Leave Behind album.
Great record.
Elevation Tour.
Great tour, yeah, yep.
And they had the big heart in the middle, you know.
2001.
And so I go to the show, and we're standing on the floor behind.
Did you already did you go by yourself, or would you go
with
a big group?
No, I went with a couple friends.
This was American Airlines.
American Airlines Center. Or Reunion Arena. I can't remember if that was still around. But
I think it was, Airlines Center, pretty sure.
Okay, American Airlines Center. We're down there on the floor. A friend of mine had a cowboy hat on and a Bono during the show, reached down, grabbed his hat, put it on.
Oh, so you were down there in the pit.
Right up on the pit.
On the catwalk.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And after the show, my friend whose hat had been worn, you know, I guess he got it back, and he said, hey, they're staying at the Crescent Hotel.
Ah, the famous Dallas Hotel.
Where else
would you stay in Dallas if you didn't?
That's right, the Crescent.
The mansion or the Crescent.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And he said, they're going to be eating dinner down at Bo Nash, which is the restaurant down in the lobby.
Right.
So we're kind of like, we'll go by there and maybe we'll see him.
They were going to be eating after the show?
After the show, yeah.
Okay,
we're staying there tonight, and it's just right over there. Let's just go. It's a few blocks away, so we go
there. See what's going on.
Yeah, just go hang at the bar. See if we see him. Maybe we'll get the nerve up and go say, hey, great show. And
yeah, right.
Maybe they'll want us to jam with him or something.
Yeah, there you go.
Always the fantasy.
All your teenage fantasies playing out here.
Absolutely.
In play.
Yeah.
I love it.
And I had literally had a recurring dream. You know, you have some of those recurring dreams. It's kind of always the same. And for me, for whatever reason, it was always that I was chatting it up with members of U2.
Yeah.
But it was always them coming to my part of the world, like them at my high school hanging out. I'm like introducing Bono to my high school drama teacher and weird stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah. What's going on?
So we're in the restaurant. We don't see them. We see their manager, Paul McGinnis, is in there.
Yes, yeah, legendary
manager. They're staying here. No Doubt, Gwen Stefani from No Doubt.
Okay,
she's in the restaurant. We're like, okay, they opened up for him tonight. Okay.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So I'm thinking, all right. So
Getting warmer.
I'm thinking, okay. So I go out to use the restroom. I go downstairs, and I'm fantasizing what I'm going to say if I run into these guys. And I walk up the stairs, and I look out the window, the front of the hotel there, and this white cargo van pulls up. And this guy jumps out and opens the door, and all these musician-looking guys get out. But it's not U2, and it's not No Doubt or whatever. And I just this guy gets out with this kind of gray hair, baseball cap, bushy eyebrows, and he's walking with this entourage into the lobby. And I'm like, huh. I don't know who this guy is. He looks.
You didn't just see this guy play live.
No, I did not.
You were like, okay.
Yeah, wrong musician, but he looked like a but I couldn't put it together in my head. So I'm like, huh. And impulsively, I just said, I'm just going to go get on the elevator, go to the top floor.
You're by yourself now.
Yeah, my friends are at the bar in the restaurant.
Okay, so you're just off on your own. You're following your own census, your own inner compass at this point.
Yes.
Okay.
I think if they're here, they're upstairs, they're on the top floor probably.
Yeah.
Where the suites are. I'll just go up there and see if I can hear
them. You been kind of watching the front doors?
Yeah.
Then you start to think maybe they're already here. Maybe
they're already upstairs. Yeah. You know, maybe they're not coming down here. I just left my friends at the bar. I just said, I'm going to the restroom real quick.
See what I can see.
Yeah. No. I go upstairs. I get on the elevator. It opens up. I step out the hallway. I hear these Irish lilting voices down the hall. No kidding. I look down the hall.
So what floor? You go top floor?
Top floor, like the fourth floor.
There wasn't any security or anything? Not at the elevator. So you just kind of get in. You could have been a guest in the elevator, hotel probably.
I had my cocktail in my hand from the bar.
Yeah. You're an actor. You're just blending in.
Yeah, I'm wearing the same thing all these other guys are, like jeans and a black button-down Western shirt. And
acting like you belong.
Acting like, if you walk around with confidence and act like you belong.
Look people in the eye, nod, how you doing? Just keep walking.
Yeah. If you have a clipboard and a headset, you can go anywhere.
Yeah.
Anywhere in the world.
And a laminate around your neck.
You can go into the UN building, yes. So I walk down the hall, and lo and behold, there's bass player from U2, Adam Clayton.
Just standing there.
At the end of the hallway, talking to these four. There's like six security guys outside the room.
Now, is this an open room, like a ballroom or something?
No, this is just the regular hallway of a hotel.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Okay, so I'm on the fourth floor.
Adam Clayton!
Yeah, he's just at the end of the hallway chatting it up with these security guards. Well, then, right at that moment, boo, I hear the elevator behind me open up. And I'm like, oh, crap. Okay, so I better act like you're going downstairs. Act like you just left the party. Past these people.
Right.
Like, hey, I belong. And so if they happen to see you later, it's like, oh, there's that guy. So I turn around, it's the guy from the van earlier. And he passes me by, and I'm like, who is that guy? And I'm like, is it Boz Scaggs or something?
Yeah,
it looks like
he's
kind of that age, and I can't figure it out. And he and his crew just go walking right towards the party. I pretend like I'm waiting to get in the elevator. And after a moment, I thought, well, why don't I just walk in behind them?
Like you're with them.
Yeah.
These guys look like they knew where they were going.
Yeah, they did. So they walk down the hallway. They walk straight past the security guys, and I was kind of the scraggler. You know, I was like, hey, trying to catch up. And I think I pulled out my phone and acted like I was wrapping up a conversation.
There you go. Yeah, we're getting to the point right now. I'll call you back.
Yeah, let me call you back. I got to go in here real quick. And so I walk
Clayton's already here.
Yeah, Adam Clayton passes us when we're walking in. He kind of nods like, hello.
Well, man, did you feel a shiver down your spine with Clayton kind of
walking? Oh, yeah. He walks right by me.
Yeah.
Smiles and nods,
hey,
oh my God, it's Adam Clayton. Okay, keep it together.
Compose yourself.
Act like you've been to a million of these. You're tired of it. I walk in the room, and then guess who's sitting on the couch? Not a member of U2, but Eagles drummer and songwriter Don Henley.
The great Dallas's own Don Henley.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I'm putting it together. I'm like, okay.
We're in the right place.
Don Henley is here. He's hanging out at their after party. I look over. There's Paul McGinnis, their manager.
How did Henley look? Youthful? Gray hair? What did he look like?
He looked all right. He looked kind of had this sour look on his face, you know?
He always does.
He kind of always does. And so I just immediately looked for an empty spot. I didn't want to get
caught. By yourself.
Yeah.
Just, sir, can we help you? Yeah. You're looking around. Yeah.
So I sat down next to the
Now, this is where all that acting experience is.
That's right.
It's coming into play.
I'm acting tired and worn out from the long night of whatever I was apparently doing.
Helping
I
don't you know two do something.
Maybe. Yeah. I sit down next to this woman. She turns out to be their tour manager that handles all their transportation. Yeah. So with her, I'm kind of talking shop. I'm like, how many stages do you guys have piggybacking
going
each other?
Ahead and,
she's like, oh, we have three different rigs. And
American girl, Irish?
American girl.
Okay.
And I start telling the truth. I guess when you lie, you tell the least amount of lying as possible.
Right. That's
what I've heard. I'm not a very good liar. So I told him I was a school teacher, and she's like, oh, wow, how interesting. And next thing you know, the room's getting filled up, you know, with more people, and there comes in Bono and The Edge.
Well, did from you two. So what was the feeling there? You just kind of looked up? Did she kind of look up like, oh, they're here, and you just turn around?
There was no big entrance. I mean, it was just I'm milling around. I went over to get some food.
Did the breath go out of you at that time? Did you kind of have a little bit?
This whole time, no? I'm waiting for somebody to tap me on the shoulder and go, excuse me, who are you? And
do you have your invitation, sir?
Yeah.
It's in the car.
Yeah, there's no invitations. It's very casual. And there's no big partying going on. No one's up there, you know, going crazy. It's just, but there's Gwen Stefani and her bandmates. And,
Henley.
Don Henley.
Yes.
And The Edge and Bono are in there, and Larry Mullen Jr. is in there.
So they're all there.
They're all there, except for Clayton, who left.
I'll be darned.
So somehow, now this, I end up in this position where I'm standing around a coffee table. It's a little suite. It's not that big of a room.
Yeah, yeah.
Fireplace, little stereo system.
Like how many people in the whole party would you guess?
25?
Oh, really? So small. I thought it was a big reception.
No. There's no fans. There's no...
Nothing.
So-and-so won the radio contest.
This is their crew, some invited guests.
Yeah.
That's it. And you.
And Max Hartman.
The biggest U2 fan.
Yeah. And I'm acting like just whatever, big deal.
Oh, man.
Well, turns out...
Stranger among us.
Yeah. So I'm standing around a coffee table.
Yeah.
To my left, directly, The Edge.
The Edge!
To my right, directly, Bono. I'm standing in between them. Next to Bono, it goes Paul McGinnis, their manager.
Yeah.
Another woman that was one of their road managers, Gwen Stefani from No Doubt.
Yeah.
And remember the man, Don Henley and his wife.
Yes.
And then the man that got out of the van with the baseball cap, who is Neil Diamond.
None other than Neil Diamond.
Diamond.
So when did you figure this out? That
is Neil. I'm standing in this circle.
Okay.
And they're all kind of talking. It's one of those dinner table type conversations where everyone's kind of
Are you
in on
chiming
the same...
in or are you just sort of drinking and just laughing? Just, you know?
Yeah, I'm doing that at
blending
first.
In.
I think I chimed in once and I can't remember what I said, but I just remember how strange it felt to look around the circle and have The Edge, Neil Diamond, Don Henley, and
Bono
kind of look and consider.
Nod like,
okay,
well
that's
said,
a good point. None of them knowing who the hell I am. But everyone in that circle knew who each other was except me.
Yeah, sure.
And at no point did anyone go...
Everyone in that circle had been on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine at least 5 times, except for you.
Right.
And yet here they are indulging you.
Yes.
Handing you a drink.
Yeah.
Enjoying a little after-show conversation.
Yeah. Not only that, I'm talking to... Oh, it gets weirder. The Edge goes, hey, can I get you something to drink? You want a beer?
He turns to you?
He turns to me asking
He probably thinks you're the husband of someone on his crew. He don't want to be rude, right? He's just like, hey, who's this guy? That's my husband. Oh, sorry, you know.
Totally.
Nice guys.
Nice as can be.
Oh, yeah.
I'm talking with Bono. He's like, what do you do? I say, I'm a school teacher, which I was at the time. I was teaching
school. But they just played a show at the American Airlines Center?
Yeah.
Well, I thought they'd be laying down in like a oxygen chamber or something. They're just out having dinner and some drinks.
They're just hanging around in their suite
at
the Crescent Hotel.
Oh, love it. All right, keep going. What happens? So you're at the coffee table.
So, we're having this circle talk, and Bono is exactly like you think he would be. He's talking about world events.
Short,
he's talking
world
about
peace,
Africa,
yeah.
AIDS, and funding for
how
that.
How tall Bono? 5'4", 5'6", 7"?
Oh, 5'3".
Is he really
he's
that
tiny.
Short?
Yeah, he's
tiny,
a short
tiny,
guy.
Tiny. Okay.
All of them are.
Yeah.
The Edge, Larry.
Very little. They're leprechauns.
Yes. They're leprechauns. So I'm talking with them, and my great quote I got out of Neil Diamond, which was just...
Now so at what point do you go, oh my God, that's Neil Diamond? Was something that's, said?
That's what freaked me out, I think, the most, is because I just looked over across the circle, and I finally realized, and Bono was talking to him and saying, he said, you know, Neil, they love a good tune over there, and you should
you
go...
You need to go play.
You should go play
Africa.
Ireland.
And, yes.
And he told Don Henley, you should get the Eagles back together and go play at Slain Castle. And
did Don Henley immediately run out the door?
No, he just kind of gave him this look like... You know, just with this disgusted look on his face like that.
Henley, what
day.
A party pooper. Did you turn to him and go, come on, Don, lighten up?
Oh, yeah, he was just miserable.
Looking at his watch.
Yeah, just
pulling
like,
on his wife's
yeah,
arm.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
He was kind of a sourpuss. I realize, I think, why they can't stay together. It's probably because he's a douche.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, but.
So Neil, it dawns on you, this is the.
I look across the circle and I see him and I'm like. And I'd been doing this little variety show I've talked to you about. And one of the characters I did was a spoof of Neil Diamond.
Yeah.
Which the next Thursday I was going to be doing again.
Yeah.
I can't believe that I didn't recognize him staring right across from him.
Yeah, and there he is.
So there he is. And at this point, now everyone in the circle is kind of talking to each other, and he and I are kind of the odd men out looking at each other like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I look to him and say, so how was your show tonight?
Yeah.
And he was like, well, we fooled him again.
We fooled him again. Had he played?
Yeah, he had played over at the other arena.
Oh, okay.
At Reunion Arena while they were at American Airlines.
Okay, I think I do remember that on the same night. Yeah, yeah.
I just thought, oh my gosh.
We fooled him again. Ain't no big surprise.
Ain't no big surprise. Love on the rocks.
Right. So Diamond.
So then the Edge asked me if I want to get a beer, and I wanted to keep talking with him, so I said, right. Let me walk with you.
Yeah, I'll come with you. Yeah,
he gets stopped by some people, and this older man is being introduced, and he's literally the funniest thing. I always thought, what happens to him when he meets strangers that don't really know the the game, or that he's like, well, do I call you Mr. Edge, or the,
is the
your first name?
Is that what they were saying to
and
him?
He very politely was like, no, actually, my name is Dave, but that's my nickname that guy over there gave me, and he's pointing to Bono. And they're like, his nickname is Bono Vox, but it's shortened to Bono. And it was nice as could be, like, it's the first time he ever got asked.
Yeah, I just...
So I'm up there now. It's been about 40 minutes. I mean, I've been mingling,
getting
talking.
Away with murder.
Bono's admiring me because I teach school. He was
that's
one of
the
most...
Yes, we need more teachers.
Yeah, he's just all over that. At some point, I realize my friends have been standing down there in this lobby bar for an hour, and they don't even know where I am. And
Who cares?
I know.
At this point.
So I decide to try to sneak out and see if I can get my friend and bring him back up there. Because honestly, he's even more of a YouTube freak
than
I am.
You don't even want to go back to him with this story.
No.
That had to be terrifying. Guess where I've been the last 30 minutes? Where? The bathroom? Just, no, man.
I walked down into the lobby and he saw me coming in the restaurant and he was just looking at me like,
where have you
I know
been?
Where you've been. He goes, were you just where I think you were? And I'm like,
yeah.
I was just in their suite. Don Henley's up there, and
Neil Diamond. Oh my gosh,
he flips. So he says, "Well, we got to go back up there." I was like, "Yeah, I came down to see if you want to go." And he was like, "Do you have one of your demos with you? You know, your big dream is all, or the fantasy is like you're gonna pass off your recording of some of your music to your idol,
YouTube.
And they're gonna love it." And
you
need to come on the road with us.
Yeah,
that's how it works.
Come live in my house.
Yeah, I found the next thing. So, sure enough, I went to my car. I get a little demo I had. We go back up there. They let me back in because they recognize me.
Everybody cheers. Oh,
come
on
back
in. Come
on back in. They wouldn't let my friend in. It was like, I told you, nobody can, no other guests that aren't already here. I'm like, okay. I'll wait out here in the hall. I just want to say goodbyes.
Right.
So I go back in there.
You just gained access. It's incredible.
I know. So I go back in there.
See, your friend was probably twiddling his thumbs, looking all nervous. They knew he didn't belong.
Yeah.
You, the actor, prevailed.
That's right.
Wow. So you go back in.
I go back into the – now it's thinned out a little bit. I don't even really notice that much, but I didn't notice is that Neil Diamond and company, who I'd followed in there, they're all gone.
Oh.
So I go back in.
The Diamond Entourage had left.
Yes. So now it's just me.
And Bono.
Bono and the Edge and their people. And they're like, wait, I remember talking to this guy. He was nice, but I don't know who he was, really. And
I thought he was with
somebody. Was with Neil.
Yeah, right.
And meanwhile, I'm trying to get Bono to come listen to this demo because he had played me. He was on this Mick Jagger solo record, played me a little bit of it earlier. And I'm like, Bono is showing me something. He's like, I haven't heard it yet. And he couldn't figure out how to work the stereo. He was like Cunningham. He just kind of couldn't figure out how to work the machinery.
Poor old Wes Cunningham, our friend.
Yeah.
Technically inept. Yeah.
Yes.
So Bono. So
I go. I get to the CD player. Yeah. Bono's next to me. He's got the CD of his still stuck on his finger. You know.
Yeah.
And I put in my disc, and he's like, "If you can figure out how to work it, you know."
Sure.
And I press play. Right then, this woman comes up, taps me on the shoulder, and is like, "Excuse me, who are you with?"
See, they got suspicious when you put your own shit in.
Yeah.
Excuse my language.
Yeah.
When you put your own music in, just wait a minute. What's this guy selling here?
Yeah.
So that was it.
Probably.
Well, what happened?
Yeah.
So she
comes up and goes, "Who are you here with?" I was like, "Oh, I came with Neil and all of them," which I did.
Yeah.
Theoretically.
I was here with Neil Diamond. How many times have you said that in your life?
Yeah, well, that one night. So she kindly was very friendly, but, and I'm going to go talk with security real quick, and we'll find out.
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't want to get embarrassingly run out of there, so I press play. Ring. I hear the first chords of my song playing, and I walk out the door and just voluntarily kind of leave. And right then, the security guy from the Crescent now has to put on a show that he's really going to kick me out of.
Yeah.
After I'm like, "Oh, I'm leaving. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Everyone was very nice. I'm sorry to crash the party. I had a great time. We're leaving." He's like, Oh, yeah. Oh, you're leaving.
Yeah.
I'm going to escort you out of here now." I was like, "Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Oh, I have no reason to stay. I'm not staying here." And that was pretty much it. I walked down the hallway with the swelling sounds of my demo record playing, and at least I knew that, you know, on some small level, I got to give them back a little bit of something. You know, they were hearing my music, or at least my interpretation of what I thought was music, into the ears of those same guys that inspired me so much, you know? So that's the
Neil Diamond. I want all podcast listeners up there to listen to me very carefully. Should you ever aspire to be on this show, which so many of you do, bless you all. If you can ever bring in a story like that, you will have free reign on the show. That is a music story Max Hartman delivered to you.
Thank you.
The voice of so many commercials, films, stage, and so much more. What a fantastic story. The U2 story. Wow, it's even better than I remember. You told it to me one night in a bar somewhere.
Yeah.
I got so much more out of it this time.
Great.
Thank you for sharing, Max. U2, fantastic. Oh, to the vault we go. How do you follow that? I don't know. We'll see who has the gall to even try to follow that next. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast. Thrilled you are with us this week. Delighted as always. Don't you know you can download any one of my records for just $4, p2tunes.com, or you can go to iTunes. They're all there as well. Make sure you pick up Alive Alone, which is a live 25-song solo acoustic album I did. Only available at P2Tunes. So don't try to find it on iTunes. Go to P2Tunes, get it now. $4. Along with the new album, Blueprint Garage Volume 3, featuring Dirty South, our Gary Floater tune that we covered. Outstanding stuff. How about that Max Hartman story, huh? Good stuff. Those are the kind of music stories you love to hear. So thrilled that he shared it with me and all of you here today on the podcast. Well, man, I want to take a close look at that U2 record of that era, of that tour. Because, man, I'd given up on U2. I was married, kids, whatever. I wasn't keeping up with U2. Wasn't just the biggest fan. I always loved them, I guess. You know, always had their stuff. But, gosh, after, Zooropa, which I thought was good, and Pop and some other things they put out. I just didn't follow them as closely. They did the tour with the big linen and all that. I was like, eh, whatever. But man, all of a sudden, they come out with All You Can't Leave Behind, this album, a very unassuming kind of photograph of them sitting in an airport. I'm kind of intrigued by it. And I hear some cuts on the radio just driving around. I'm like, man, there's something to this new U2 record. Well, for one thing, they went back to our old friend, my favorite, Daniel Lanois, helped produce this record. It's just got that feel, man, the cool stuff going on, some atmospherics, great sound, and Lanois just gets so much out of whoever he's working with. I aspire to do nothing less myself, but just a great album ensued, great tour. You had the tragedy of 9/11 as this record came out. U2 played the Super Bowl that year, did the 9/11 tribute. So many awful things also kind of around this album. It was weird when it came out. It was almost like it was just the right album. Even though it was released before 9/11, it seemed like it was that was what the whole record was about. Does that make any sense? It was a weird, weird thing, but a weird sense listening to this album around then, around those events, and then U2 playing the Super Bowl, the great tribute they did there, and you know, despite the tragedy and everything, some great music and a great time for U2 and their music and their career, as far as just being a relevant rock and roll band. I loved this track. This is one of my favorite ones on the record. We hear Elevation starting off here. Great rock and roll team. One of their best upbeat rockers in years. But this next song, evidently, you know, they wrote about Joey Ramone, the great leader of the Ramones punk band, was dying in his bed. It wasn't written about him, but there was a story that Joey Ramone was dying and was listening to this song, this new U2 song, In a Little While. One of my favorite songs from the record, and Joey Ramone just saying how great the song was. If you listen really carefully, as I do as a producer, my ears, I don't know, I just listen for all kinds of weird stuff. It's that electric guitar little lick, that starting off. But if you listen real closely, man, you can hear the drums playing in the background. I don't know if it's a loop or the live drums playing, you know, kind of bleeding into the guitar mic. You know, that stuff just makes me all nerdy and geeky. Just that they didn't, it wasn't all separated. You kind of hear this, you know, probably all playing in the same room. The Edge just had a mic on his amp, and there you have it. In a Little While, check it out. Listen for those drums in the background, barely. You too. Just a great track, man. A great track. One of U2's very, very best, in my opinion. You know, around this time, me and the band, Ryan Lynch was playing bass, Jason Stolle on drums, of course, the full band, early 2000s, early aughts, mid-aughts. We listened to this record a lot, you know, drive around in the van, start listening to other U2. You kind of get into a band's new record like this, you go back and listen to your old stuff. We played a show in Oklahoma City we went up there to play the Warmy Dog, Oklahoma City. We'd opened for Krager there, and I think Reckless Kelly. We had some good shows there. Then we show up on some weeknight by ourselves, and there was like one guy in there, and the sound guy, and the bartenders, like three people, and it's a pretty big club. So we're just like, oh my God, what are we gonna do? Play for 2 hours in here? Sure enough, we did there, sucked it up. We did a few of our songs, we're doing our set. I'm just like, dude. I said, man, let's play. We'd been playing one. The song U2 for a while, so we played that one, and I said, man, let's play another U2 song, what the hell. So then we played In a Little While, I think I kind of need that lick, and we did that one. We kind of all looked at each other and we just go, man, how many U2 songs could we play? And we hadn't rehearsed any of this stuff, and man, we sat there and played for 2 hours and played about 22 U2 songs in a row, some of them quite badly, but some of them very, very good. Ryan on bass knew all the little bass lines, so we were kind of going off of what he was doing. And if you listen to U2 a lot, you know, there's not a lot of guitar chords and strumming, and it's just the edge kind of those percussive delay kind of hits. So I set some reverb on the amp. You know, and I knew the songs, and I knew the lyrics and stuff like that pretty well. And, man, we just plowed through The Unforgettable Fire and Joshua Tree, Octung Baby, all the new stuff. And we just had a ball. We were looking at each other. Okay, what else we got? Let's do Bullet the Blue Sky. Stolle would start. You know, we did the slide solo. And, it was just a blast, man. It's kind of what you have to do at those shows sometimes. You're like, man, I've got to find a way to entertain myself enough and keep myself, you know, working and in the show any way possible. Sometimes that includes doing a U2 tribute for 2 hours. So, this one guy there, man, thought it was the greatest show he ever saw. He was a fan who had driven in from somewhere else. And he goes, man, I feel sorry for you guys if there's nobody here. And so I thought I was going to have to listen to all your songs, which would have been great. But the inspiration and the fire you guys did playing those U2 songs, man, it's so unique and so weird and crazy. I'm glad I drove in from wherever he drove in from. So, I hope he's still out there with great memories of that show. He's the only one, God knows. Well, another standout from this record. I love this one, man. Just kind of a Van Morrison jangly acoustic kind of thing. Wild Honey, you too.
In the days when we were swinging from the trees, I was a monkey stealing honey from a swarm of bees. I could tell. Thank you.
Love it, man. Love it. Just jangly acoustic strumming. You two at their very best here. All That You Can't Leave Behind. Man, a runner for their best record they ever made. Oh, take your Joshua Tree and put it under the desk, for crying out loud. We are, that's kind of what made them. But I would argue that this one, Rocktongue Baby, is probably their best. Anyway, I digress. Phil Pritchett here. Our thanks to Max Hartman, the great Max Hartman, my old friend, for coming in, sharing some U2 stories from the show he went to in Dallas, sneaking into the suite. Great stuff. I'm so glad all you fans got to hear it out there. That's one of those that it doesn't mean as much if I sit here and tell the story, you know, from a third-person point of view, someone who heard the story. Just not nearly as good. So, Max, delivering there. Thank you so much, my friend. And don't forget to come record here at Trinidad World Recording Studios, 817-733-5256, the huge Pro Tools room in the back, great monitoring, AVM system back there, the most comfortable confines you'll ever find in a recording studio in Texas, and me, Phil, in there helping you along the way, playing guitar, organ, keyboards, singing background vocals, doing whatever, man, playing drums, whatever's going to help the project, and just loving it and having fun. Come on up, have fun, record here at Trinidad. Email me, Phil at philpritchett.com. We're going to leave you here with this great song from this record, Stuck in a Moment. Stuck in a Moment you can't get out of, or just Stuck in a Moment? Written about the late great singer Michael Hutchence, lead singer of NXS, who killed himself, and Bono said he got stuck in a moment he can't get out of. Everyone thinking about that terrible scene of him ending his life there. Very well said, very poetic, very sad, but strangely uplifting and poppy tune. Great tune here. We'll leave you with this one. We'll see you out there on the road, folks. Be good to each other. Much tougher.
I will not forsake the girls that you bring.